Resolution 35, no time to rush.
Okay.
So I like adages that have to do with doing things slowly. Two of my favorites that pretty much mean the exact same thing are slow is smooth and smooth is fast, which is an old army adage. And then the other one, which I'm going to suggest is AVE's creation, even though there's no way that's true, is first you get good and then you get fast. And the problem with both of these formulations is that they are susceptible to crackpot realism and pragmatism, which suggests that you have an emergency in front of you, and it'd be nice if you could follow the fundamentals, but you need to deal with this right now. And that's not true, because almost every problem that people have when they're not in a war zone or starving is generally being overblown in the moment. So you steal that time back by not fucking rushing. And it turns out it gives you the time back to make your life stable enough to be able to deal with those emergencies. And so, Resolution 35 and MacTlog Season 12 is starting with no time to rush. Hit it! All right. We have a full house here and a lot of instruments. I'll explain all of that later, but first we have to get to our now third topic. Ryan!
I've got a question before we get on to another topic.
Okay.
My mind is mapped, don't worry.
So Resolution 35, you say, am I getting this phrasing right? No time to rush.
Correct.
But you've used these kinds of expressions as more or less mantras, I think, for a while. So why now?
Why this one now? Oh, this
because
one
it seems
now?
Like
because I just read a book about doing things more slowly.
It seems like you've been doing this kind of thing for years, though. How is this different from
the past? Would argue that it took you this long to get here. You're already doing it. Yeah.
That's correct.
Were you feeling rushed before?
What? Yeah, of course. Everybody feels rushed all the time. The key with this resolution that the other resolutions didn't have is that I've already been doing this one for a while.
Ah, okay. Yes.
And the other reason why the Slow Productivity book works for me, even though I have a lot of critiques for it, everything I read in it is like, yeah, that checks out. And that's a different feeling than the other versions of it where you like read a thing, it's like, do things this way. And you'd be like, I guess I'll try that out. This was like, Cal Newport's like, you should do like one thing a day tops. I'm like, that's correct. That makes perfect sense.
I'm gonna cite a meme where someone tweeted, an old Italian lady once told me, you can eat whatever you want as long as you only eat lasagna on Saturday, and I'm no longer accepting dietary advice. This sounds a lot like that.
That's up to you, but let me tell you, when you can have one thing in your focal plane all day, that day's better. That day improves dramatically. You can do all your other bullshit you can do your laundry, but as long as there's like one thing you actually give a shit about during the day, those are all the best days. Mm-hmm. Like that's the way to do stuff.
I mean, or you cancel all of the minor things you were trying to do with the intention of doing the one big thing, and it becomes such a sink on your life that you just take a nap.
That sounds like a you problem. I don't have those problems. So
lasagna
you
problem.
Take a lot of naps.
Yeah, I do.
You can take a lot of naps if
you're
focusing
on one
thing.
You can take as many naps
thing.
As you need to. Yeah. There's no rush. In fact, you don't have time to rush. I love this adage so much. I worksmith this thing to death. It's fucking,
I like it. I like it.
It goes bounce, 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 bounce. It's a 4-2 or a 2-4-2-4. Like it's rhythmic. It's got this. I'm keeping this one.
I didn't mean to imply that it had no place in your life by
thank
asking
you.
That question, like some people around this table.
No, thank you.
the reason I asked that question, though, is because it seems like it has been at the forefront of your mind for a while. But
yeah.
And that's kind of the point, it seems. So, okay, good.
Yeah, it's just properly defined.
Sure.
And we can, now that I have enough instruments to redo the MacLog theme, we can finally start season 12. So.
Hooray.
Yeah. That's what was keeping it up, is I don't want... Yeah, exactly. Hit it! And many more.
All right, anyway, you were trying to get to a third topic.
I was
there.
Trying to get Ryan in front of a microphone.
Oh, very good. All right.
He's not even sitting in front of a microphone.
And we need intermission music.
All right, Ryan's now in front of a microphone. Welcome to the microphone, Ryan.
Oh, I am centered.
Ryan, how's using Isley?
What's that?
How's unionizing?
Unionizing goes on and on and on, and it's going well. We've overcome challenges meant to destroy us. We have inspired new and greater horizons on the precipice of action and adventure, keeping me so busy I have no ability to analyze how I do things or why, which seems to be effective in actually getting things done. So,
how does that intersect with Biden's debate performance?
Joe Biden, great debater or masturbator, right? Like, that is, I think, the question before us tonight. I don't know. I think we will look back on this and realize that we are now in a post-debate America, right? And and that I think this will mark the time that we were on. I thought it was a commanding performance for senility in our society. Something I think that will really adjust how we view politics. This is all.
So what's great about this is that if we have a brokered convention or whatever they call it, a rushed madhouse.
Yes.
And Germentum is on record saying that this debate can only be bad for Trump.
Yes.
And the way he's going to spin this, I'm confident, and I'm kind of with him, is that Trump may have accidentally forced himself to compete against a more competent candidate if they take him out, yes. Which would have only have happened as a result of the debate.
Absolutely, no. No, all options are fun on this one going forward.
And the funny... Ryan,
yeah.
Clinton might lose the 2024 election. That is an option.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
Now.
Yeah,
I can't. I cannot wait.
No, I mean, the Dems can't look forward for anything. They're like, "What do we got in reserve?" And they're like, "Hey, Hillary Clinton. You know, she's right there.
It might
she's
happen.
Tanned,
it could
rested,
happen.
Ready.
She could be back.
Yeah,
she could be back.
Oh man.
Anyway, that's the fourth and last election cast. I don't want to talk about that anymore.
No, absolutely not. Moving on.
Yeah. So anyway, unions are somehow going okay in Florida despite legal shenanigans.
Yeah. I mean, the only unions that are failing right now are those ones that can't seem to read. It's rather surprising. So, like, I live in Pinellas County now in the city of Clearwater blue-collar unit representing 840 workers. Just missed a filing deadline, like, and, like, the workers lost their union. Like, just poof, gone. And we'll not speak ill of a fellow union. It wasn't us. I mean, let me be clear about that. Wasn't fucking my responsibility, because I got my shit done. Everything. It's a challenge, and I think as well, like, it's not something that's entirely, that is like going to kill unions, right? Like, it creates a lot of make work and administrative hassle on top of that, but at the same time, like. It's interesting, I think, when systems, we're talking about them, systems, right? Like, it's interesting when systems kind of, like, come up against a kind of systemic challenge that's going to reorient their how they operate and how they focus, because, you know, now there's no excuse, but also there's clarity on what we have to do and what it will take to overcome this. And you'll either meet that challenge or you won't. And I think we've been really effective in overcoming the initial challenge of this. We've got another stage of doing something we've never done, which is essentially we are running elections as if we were creating new unions, right? So, like, the way unions, you know, you get a group of workers together, they file with the state that they want to create it, and then the state sends all of the workers, not just the ones that want the union, right? They send all of the workers a ballot that says, do you want a union or not? And that's, I think, the next challenge that we face. So, and knowing internally where our union is at and internationally, you know, in the national sense, right? Like, people were looking at what we were doing and not believing that we would be able to overcome it. Turns out we can tie our shoes, you know, like, we can do the kind of like the fundamental stuff that kind of comes with these things. And we didn't have to rely on a huge amount of help from outside of our organization in order to accomplish it. So,
do you wish you had more of it?
More of what?
More of that help.
It would. I mean, more help is always
okay,
fucking appreciated.
Okay.
I mean, no, like, it would have been easier, certainly less stressful and, you know, less fucking 65-hour weeks and shit. But, like, you know, I think everything, too, is challenging the first time that you do it in an organization, right? Like, you learn a lot about the process that you foresaw and set up. And I think, luckily, the way that I was kind of, like, overseeing my two regions, we had hiccups and there are things that I have definitely learned from, right? But, like... You know, you just got to be really rigorous and diligent and making sure that, like, next time around, like, we're taking every single opportunity and not leaving anything to chance. And then also, like, realizing that there are ways you can do things that can make things a little bit easier on yourself. And, you know, and then I'm sure I'll have similar lessons after the second time we do this next year. So, But it's been good, man. Unionizing's fun. It's been good.
Do you have a mentee yet?
No, I did hire two new organizers on my own. We got rid of some organizers and brought in some new ones, and turns out that, like, the new people we brought in, who I said, like, hey, this job's tough and you have to work, and they're like, okay, I'll work, and
they're working?
Yeah, they're working. They're, like, actually doing the things, and, you know, and their KPIs, which I actually learned what that stood for the first fucking time in my 42 years on this planet. Yeah, like, we've increased our productivity. I don't want to say it like that, but we've met a lot of the metrics that we weren't meeting beforehand since I've moved and overseen this new team coming in and handling these operations.
Are these Gen Alpha, Z, or Millennial?
Well, they're under 30. They're under 20. They're under 25.
Okay, 26. So we'll cut all this out. Okay, we don't want to encourage them.
The kids are all right, though. I'll say that.
All right, very good. Yeah. With that in mind.
I've heard the kids aren't all right.
I don't know who's saying that. Who's saying that?
Some punk band.
Yeah. Oh, very good. But yeah, unionizing's good. The state of the unions is strong, and the ones I'm fucking in control of. So.
Very good.
Yeah.
You mentioned near the beginning of that you were wondering, or that you were so overwhelmed, I guess, that you were not sure about whether what you're doing was effective. What did you mean by that?
Yeah. So this is weird, right? So essentially the timeline we're talking here is from like mid-January to mid-May. And about like a month or so into things, there was like a lot of concern as we were like rolling out this campaign, right? So we'd done all the prep. I thought a lot about what I wanted to do. I knew where I had a general understanding of moving into like new turf, right? So like I was dealing with leaders and established leaders and workers I had no relationships with. And then I'm like, hey, do more work for your union than you've done in like 10 years of working there, you know, like,
right.
Or with your union. And like, ultimately, you know, there was, and then also having staff changeover in basically the whole month of March, right? So we had like organizer who was leaving and not going anywhere. We had another organizer who was out for four weeks with health issues. So I was alone. And then hiring new people in who, of course, have, you know, let's just say there's not a lot of fucking experienced labor organizers looking for work in Florida right now.
Right.
So, you know, bringing new people in, and there was like, you know, it just, a lot was on the rocks there. I wasn't feeling successful. I knew we were in a good place, but it didn't feel like it.
Okay.
And so it was like, you know, it was a lot of stress and concern that I had with all of that. So that was not fun.
That's hard.
Yeah, it was not fun. That was not fun. The job's good, but that was like a lot of pressure and frustration and, you know, doubt and, you know, crying and, you know, like.
That's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
But been there, and that sucks. But it does sound like you are satisfied, at least to a certain extent, with the progress that you've been able to make. It's not, so when you first made that comment, I was like, is he feeling any kind of positivity about this? But. You are.
Oh, so. No, we did the thing. We did the fucking thing.
Yeah.
Like, I will say that, like, we weren't turning in our homework as, you know, we weren't writing our homework in the hallway before class,
uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
Like, we fucking, you know, it was relatively comfortable at the end getting everything together. And then, you know, we were so, because we're in an anti-union environment, we were so diligent and careful about how we were going through these processes and to meet the metrics that the state were going to judge us on, you know, that we took such a conservative approach that we were, like, overproducing, right? And... because the state could fucking make it really fucking hard on us and people would like lose their contracts and shit. And we didn't, you know, we take that charge seriously. So, you know, we ended up with more than what we needed at the end, but like, I wasn't, you know, we had a mentality that we weren't going to leave anything to chance. We weren't going to rely on anyone in the fucking state to do us a favor. And it turns out that like, we miscalculated. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't have to be as hard as we made it out. But like, I don't think that's, you know, in an environment that is as fluid as this, because there's no like market, you know, there's nothing, you know, it is weirdly political in that sense, right? Like, because there's no other proof than what you're able to accomplish within a churning system of other people's judgments and interpretations and the way that they literally legally clear the work you're doing. Right. And
there's also a malicious governor back at the helm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Which we didn't know whether or not he was going to, like, how close of an eye he was at. And then there's another complication as well. So, like, we could have like intervening unions, right? So like a work, like a boss union or a fucking like, you know, millionaire think tank could come in and like, and get similar petitions in the same employers. And our threshold for keeping and maintaining the process was 30% of the total workforce, right? So 1,000 workers, 300. An intervening union only needs 10%.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So like we could have been, and what that is, of course, is it's a strategy that would like bleed off yes votes from a union, right? Like, hey, we're a union and your dues are only $5 a month and fuck these fucking liberal hacks and shit that are your union and whatnot. And, you know, so there, you know, in that environment, it could have been much, much more challenging. I mean, in terms of like the next stage that we're moving towards. But it doesn't appear that that's the case because, you know, like, and this is maybe leading back to the politics cast, but like, you know, I'm not too worried about what's going to happen in November because like we're facing down these fucks right now and they're like, they ain't shit. And I think Anna, in the conversations we've had about all these changes that have happened to K-12 education and, you know, all these like anti-LGBTQ, like nobody's fucking minding the store. Like it's all fucking online bullshit.
That takes work.
Yeah, it takes effort and like time and like, you know, like the fucking original fascists were goddamn World War II veterans with fucking, you know, chlorine gassed lungs and shit like that. And then like, you know,
and still, they were true fucking racists. Yeah. They were like motivated racists.
And I mean, and don't get me wrong, I'm not wanting this, but like, yeah, I don't, they don't got the juice. I don't think they got the juice.
No, especially not additional work that gets put on by new legislation. I mean, look at all the companies whose business model is break the law until someone stops you. Yep. And then the number of people that find out they just won't stop you.
Yep.
You can just keep doing it.
Yeah. We're not breaking the law. I want to be clear about that. But like, I think it's, I don't know. You know, I think that one of the successes we've had as a union and why we didn't fuck up like other, like unions are still fucking up in the state, like just dropping the ball. And, you know, we were really dedicated and focused on what we had to do. And I was promoted specifically with this responsibility in mind. And then, you know, and then basically told to do it on my own. And it feels fucking good to like overcome this major hurdle, and then we've just got the next one to go through with it. So thank you. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. And
sounds like time's up.
Yeah. New topic.
All right.
So yeah.
All right. Moving into the couch, we have the director, producer, actor of film 5, 6, 6, 6, film 6, introducing Nicole Paddock.
At what point does film 3? Just
whenever I want it to come out.
No. At what time?
It's my film.
At what time does that just disappear into the ether, and it's just non-existent, and you move on to making film 7?
Never. Film 3 is my first film.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works. That's how the numbers scheme works.
Yeah, he's got his place.
That's rules.
Always be his.
That's correct. I'm parked. All right. No one gets that number.
Squatter's rights.
He doesn't complete this one, so.
No, I was just saying, at what point do you decide, film 3, that ship sailed.
Never.
We need a new film.
Nope. I'm sticking with it. If I don't have, I'm not putting out films 7, 8, 9, or 10. They might, but I'm not putting any of those out until film 3 is in the can.
That's what I'm saying. It's a good excuse to not do any of it.
To take it slow, as some might say.
Oh my God.
No.
No need to rush.
No. Slow. I didn't say nothing about slow. I didn't say nothing about work. No time to rush.
No time to rush.
Okay.
All rushing.
No time to rush.
Not rushing. Speaking of.
What is the number of your film, Nicole?
I guess technically it's 6. Yeah.
How's principal photography going?
So it is. Yeah, it's going. It's going slow but well. So originally I was like, if I actually filmed this whole thing, it's going to be like a hour long drama TV show, like 48 to an hour long. And then as principal photography has been taking a very long time, I'm like, well, I have to cut this down. I'm never going to finish this. It still might be 48 minutes though, even cut down. I don't know. I finished one full night sequence. It's clocking in at 17 minutes right now.
Okay. That's a lot of editing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay, so there was originally supposed to be 4 nights. I'm probably going to cut it down to 2. So.
So Skinnamahux lives.
Oh no, it's actively well. It's actively going. We've okay. got we've got workflow in the morning.
We well here's the thing.
We have a process.
My mentality going into this, right, as helper, was to use this
as cinematographer.
To use this as an exercise in how we can get better for subsequent projects. And I think we are accomplishing that goal greatly.
Oh yeah, we've got like spreadsheets for like the shots. Mm-hmm. We have like a schedule. We do like a blocking night, and then we fill our spreadsheet in, and then we do a shooting night, and we try to get about 10 shots. Sometimes we don't quite make it, but it's just slow, but it is going pretty well.
I mean, having to film the dog and doing very specific actions has been the most challenging bit, I think.
Huxley's been fine.
He's great. No, he's great. But it's still, you know, we need other folks to come in and help us with that. Because you just can't make him do the things if he's just comfortable and sitting on the floor. So,
okay. You
know. That was fun the other night, by the way.
Yeah, it was a lot of commotion the other night, though. Uh-huh. There was like a lot of shit going on in the background of all the footage.
This is the bat scene that we're talking about right now, right? The one where you're taking the bat across the room.
Yeah, yeah, in the back room. Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in that back room.
But we've gathered more equipment.
Okay.
Which is good. It's helpful. And I must say, out of all of the shit that I've bought, because I know David has put the initial investment into the equipment, we're using every little bit of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so everything is being used, which is good.
What do you have in mind when you say that?
What do you mean?
What is one of the pieces of equipment you're referring to?
A second camera.
Yeah.
So got the newer version of what David had. I bought a set of cinema lenses to go along with it in case we needed to do two camera shots at the same time. I
shot reverse shot conversations between Nicole and Huxley.
Yeah.
They're there. The option is there, right? We bought more lights. We bought RGB panel lights.
So many lights.
And then all the batteries. And I bought a follow focus. Let me tell you, that thing's awesome. You can pull
game changer.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
It really is. And we use, like I said,
a really nice tripod.
Super nice cinema tripod with the ball, I can't remember what it's called now, but the ball head on it so that you can move very, very smoothly.
Your pans and tilts are just fluid.
Beautiful.
Oh.
So all of that's been used, and I don't know.
So yeah, it's going slowly, but it's still going.
Okay.
No idea when I'll stop filming.
So I think linking into the technical, because I want to maybe veer the conversation through questions.
Okay.
More of the like thematic ideas and the compromises that I think you've mentioned that of reducing this overall. I want to get to that.
Okay. Right?
But I'm not
okay.
there yet.
Okay.
So on the technical side, right? Like, for me. And this is how I work, right? Like with film four, right? With that, like I like spent a lot of time like processing in my head what I felt that project should look like, right? And how it would be edited. So I'm not saying there wasn't like a lot of work to do when we were done shooting, but shooting, I wanted to like have the understanding of the story, what it visually looked like, had a story that we could replicate and fill in the story, right? So like we could shoot things in the same location three times. So it was like, I wanted that type of project. So, but it seems that you've gotten a project that is more staged in the way that you're composing shots, in the way that you're being very diligent in what you're trying to film, right? Would you say that has been something you didn't foresee kind of coming into it?
A lot of things I didn't foresee coming into it. One of which is how annoying, like, shooting interiors is, because like every little thing can turn into like an artistic decision, like every like light, every blanket on the floor. It's a continuity nightmare. Right. But I'm also like, I'm trying, it's weird because I'm trying to replicate something sort of that actually happened, but not like exactly. I'm trying to like basically figure out how to recreate like the idea of what happened, and like filming relatively normal things is like way more complicated than just like doing the normal thing and filming it. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if you want it to like look right or like build tension or be able to like edit movements slowly.
Also because you have to be able to convey backstory that the person doesn't have.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, if you just actually filmed the 2 weeks or the week you spent with Huxley, someone would go, why is that lady so upset with that dog?
I know.
Whereas Skin of a Hux, you have to convey why you are so upset with this dog.
That's part of the process that we've been developing where, you know, Nicole had your storyboards. And those were like the general ideas. And then we were taking those storyboards and then, you know, blocking, attempting to block with them. And those are just like the start, right? And then eventually you start getting into the whole, well, we need a way to convey this at this moment so that this two pieces make sense. And then you start adding on to it, right? And then that's when you start developing the shot list and granular detail, right? Because like eventually you have to go back and actually shoot all of this stuff. You're never going to remember it when you like sat down and blocked 10, 15 shots. And you're like, okay, what settings did I use? What angles were we at? Which lenses did we use? All that technical shit on top of what angles and what are we capturing so that we can tell the story along the way.
Yeah, each of those elements in a film crew is someone's responsibility. Yeah, like someone's basically main responsibility to track and be accountable for that.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I realized really early on. So we're going to have to do this a little bit more structured because it just... It was working a little bit, but once we started getting to, okay, wait a minute, this is a bigger project than, you know, we had realized at first, we need to do something like this. Like, we need to give it some structure and be a little bit...
The process of making it, you needed more structure.
As best boy, you can't be flying by the seat of your pants.
Script girl's doing a lot of work on those sets.
And sometimes you do. Like, sometimes you're, like, working on a shot and shit is just flowing... So you just keep it going. Like, hey, let's just try this. Let's just do this. Let's keep it rolling. And you come out with something a little bit different than what you planned. But for the most part, you have to have a plan going in or it just becomes a shit show.
Yeah, I remember back, like, filming film one. And it was, like, the whole, I think, for me, and I don't mean to speak for anyone else, right? But, like, for me, like, the... That creative juice of we're rolling was like that. That's all what that whole experience was like. It was like, we're rolling. Oh, we're good. Let's get an idea. Like, oh, yeah, now we're having fun. And it's like... Continuity, like
which
know.
One was film one again?
That was the pants.
The doors.
The pants. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Like
well, that was fun because that was the first one, right? And so we were just dipping our toes into the whole process and that experience and all of the feelings because it's not unlike any other artistic venture, like writing music, for instance, which I have older experience, like longer ago, had a lot of experience with. And it's a process. You put yourself into a headspace, and then you start experiencing the world differently because you're in that headspace, which then allows you to create something different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
So, Nicole, right, like, in thinking about, like, the kind of, like, emotion and ideas that you wanted to communicate with this, right, like, what have you kind of, like, learned from, like, getting it conceptually, right, like, planning it out and then filming it? Has there... been some sort of change or a way that you've kind of like tackled adapting to, you know,
so
is it translating from the ideas
like,
to the film?
So like visually it's kind of coming out kind of how I envisioned. It's a lot of telling story through lights.
Okay.
And that's definitely, I think, still coming across. But some of it, like I said, there's like a weird, like, translation process from like what happened to like what it looks like I'm going to be able to do to like what I finally film.
Would you have an example maybe of like a compromise that you have in mind or something?
Originally when I was staying with Huxley for like two nights, he kept running through like the entire house. Like, so we'd do the horseshoe from my bedroom through the living room to like the bedroom on the other side of the house. And I had no idea what he thought was going on. So instead I have to close off the area because it's just like, I don't have a steady cam. Trying to direct Huxley through like that much space is too hard. So instead I've had to redirect it to where he's like running to the sliding door. And like, that's like the spot that he keeps trying to like go out to. So I've had to kind of like adapt in just like what it's possible to do. But I think it's still like kind of the same. It's still telling like the same story, but I have to I have to do it like within the parameters of like what I can actually film. Mm-hmm.
Based on a true story.
It's it's historical, like asterisk, like all based on a true story. Well, stories are.
And keeping in mind the fact that the person doesn't really care what exact shape or pathway, as long as they're conveying what happened that caused.
Well, the thing is though,
the situation.
But, like, so in my head, I had this thing where it's like I'm gonna be like chasing Huxley down the hallway with like a phone spotlight, and we're just gonna see like Huxley in this spotlight, mm-hmm. and like the reality is that's a way more complicated shot than mm-hmm. I can really do without more kind of equipment.
So you have CGI. So you have to figure out how to convey that same emotion without literally getting him to do the same thing.
Yeah. But I mean, it's worked. Huxley's, as long as you stay within Huxley's kind of like, you know, range, he's fairly easy to work with. Like he can be manipulated with treats.
Other people.
And yeah, by having people around, you can like manipulate where his energy will be. And, you know, as long as you get it in the first like 3 to 4 takes, it's usually pretty good with Huxley.
Yeah. I think the weird thing too is that like in thinking, you know, and hearing you convey the project and such, I think this is like our first film that's like trying to capture like atmosphere more than anything else, right? Like a vibe or a feel. Film 2 kind of like veered into that a little bit, but it was like accidental or like, oh yeah, like is there an atmosphere to this thing? Like, you know, but also like, you know, it's tough as well. Cause I've been watching some Fassbinder, you know, like,
very good. Oh,
right. Like, and strangely, right. Like, you know, there's atmosphere as it comes through like set, you know, Quarel being like the kind of best thing with that. But then there's also like atmosphere as it comes through like, you know, set, but also like so dependent on the performance of the actors as well. And I think that's like, I mean, maybe I'll just put this out to anyone, right? Like that's really challenging because we're like, because we are not actors.
No.
Like, okay. And one thing that I keep looking back on, like our experience doing this so far, I keep thinking to my head because I'm manning the camera, right? So I'm thinking shots. That's my focus right now, is framing and how do we capture that, all that stuff. And I keep looking at what we're watching, the good movies we're watching, and I'm just like, there's a lot of dialogue here.
Yeah,
it's a lot of performance here. So those shots don't necessarily translate to what we're doing because there isn't like that much performance per se.
Like I can act like myself and that's good, but I definitely am not gonna direct and act again. Like my next movie is gonna be something we can do over 3 weekends.
No more Clint Eastwood.
And like the rest and Matt can come back in and take over the lead acting role. Like I gotta be on one side or the other. I can't do them like both simultaneously. It's tough.
No, because I was like, because I kind of, when you guys were in St. Pete, I was like talking about my film idea and then, you know, and like thinking through this thing. And the problem was that I was watching like Bergman films.
Oh,
and I was like, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. But then like the great Bergman films have like the most incredible fucking acting ever put to film. And then I'm like, I think we need something that's a little less dependent, you know, on us.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and it's funny because, like in the takes, like, cause I, you know, I had like a script essentially, and it wasn't like really dialogue heavy, but I did kind of have some things. And then when we do takes, I'll do it without saying something. And then I'll do like a take or two where I say a line or something. Mm-hmm. And almost always I end up using the take without, where I don't say anything. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I think, but it's getting back to kind of like, you know, in our own sense, right? Like my idea, like I don't want fucking talkies. But like also like it's goddamn just enough to like get where we're at.
Yeah,
right. And
yeah.
It's like, fuck, every time we add something in, it's like, I don't know what I'm doing and I have no idea how to, you know, like, and then it like, oh, how do we make it better? And, you know, so I think it's, you know, I think we're all kind of like learning and experiencing with this, which is like why it's so fucking fun to kind of like,
yeah,
to
like
do these
listen
things.
Making yeah. movies yeah. is awesome. The fucking best.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
All right, so David.
Yes, Ron.
Yeah, so I just wanted to ask you about your film specifically, you know, and I just wanted, because I don't think we've kind of like digested like, you know, the main reasons why you haven't you know, because there was a script.
There's been multiple scripts, hasn't there? We did like a read through on one of them.
That's correct.
And I was just curious, like, is there something that is Is it something different in each kind of version or idea that you're having that's kind of like pulling you back from wanting to execute it?
It's an apathy toward the ideas. Every time I have developed a notion for what I want the film to be, it evaporates after a handful of weeks, which is not something that I want to put to paper. It's not the kind of like self-doubt thing where it's like, this is never going to come together. It is simply a matter of, I don't care enough about this to actually work on it. That can be overcome. It just takes a while.
Okay.
Particularly because, as I've mentioned before, I don't like stories.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm pretty sure film 3 is going to be an adaptation of something.
Yes.
Because that seems like an easy way to get around that.
Okay, so I am in agreement with this. Like, there is something to be said for that. Like, I think the original story ideas we've kind of come across have been, like, you know, relatively simple and such. But, like, it would be just fucking easier to, like, crib where we can and go from there.
The reason I haven't entertained that up to this point is that that's in direct conflict with the part of this that I like the most, which is writing.
Right.
So I'm in the awkward position of being what is basically either a documentarian, non-fictionalist, or otherwise something that films are not.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, my ideal muse here would be to be something like a YouTube video creator, since that's pretty much the lane that nonfiction video is in. But I also don't want to do that because I bought a nice camera and I like the more extravagant bullshit. Like, for as much merit as YouTube docu-series on whatever happens to be getting discussed, as meritorious as a profession as that is, it's not ambitious enough.
Right.
Like, almost nobody is doing work on the scale that we are doing work. Like, there's no version of Natalie Wynn Contrapoints. Extravagant sets, but there's not, like, it's a script and she's reading it in a bathtub.
She's just reading off a teleprompter.
Yeah. I mean, it's ambitious in the scope of what's discussed, but it's not actually ambitious in its production.
Yeah.
And that part is the fun part to me. The other thing that's weird about the adaptation side of that, which might relax one of the demons that I know, Ryan, you've talked about in filming, which is having an actual arc so that you can care about the characters.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, I think the number was 15 minutes. It's like you need more than 15 minutes in order to develop a character. What's interesting, we watched Clockwork Orange, and it was impossible not to compare it to Barry Lyndon on a variety of levels.
Oh, yeah.
In my head. But the thing that I noticed maybe the most, that I took away from it the most, which I imagine is not a popular first impression to have about Clockwork Orange, is that Kubrick kind of cheats in the arcs of his movies, because all his movies are at least two films.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, like, there's a first, like Barry Lyndon, there is starkly an act one and an act two.
Mm-hmm.
There may as well be different. It may as well be act, like, what is it, not episode.
The Godfather part one.
Exactly. Godfather, it may as well be a different theatrical release. And it could have been, because they'd both be 90 minutes long. And Clockwork Orange is exactly the same way. There's the criminal scenes, and then there's the jail scenes, and then there's the breakout scenes. And those are different films starring the same people, and not even all the same people. That's the other reason it's like Barry Lyndon, is there's like the one guy.
Yeah.
They're following around. And there are other characters, but they zoom in and out of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whatever film 3 turns out to be, depending which the par time for it will be dictated by however long film 6 is, because, I mean, we might as well attempt to. If you're going to manage to make an hour-long film...
I'm trying not to.
Okay. I'm just saying, in keeping...
I'm not feeling positive about it yet.
I still think it makes sense for every film we do to be longer than the last one.
Yeah. Okay, well, you're going to be sorry to go after this one.
Exactly.
Nicole's like, I got to trim this
down.
Like,
I want a 6-minute movie called, like, The Rescue. Like, it's going to be, like, the one I do after this.
Well, it can be a vignette within film 8.
Yeah.
Which is the way films are made. What's the Dave Lynch line? It's like, write down 36 scenes and you have a movie?
Yeah, no, go. Just film them.
Yeah, also, if Skinamahawks ends up being an hour, I don't think
I don't want to put that much pressure on everybody. Well, no, what was we're never going to get anything else done after that.
Not deathbed. What was the
concept? Snugglebed.
Snugglebed? There's no way Snugglebed's going to be a feature-length film.
Why not?
I got
there's so many ideas for that, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I think that might be fun to do, like, as an episodic, where you can do, like, short ones, but
three
we can, like,
segments.
But, like, do, like, many little, like, segments of it, like, going off.
Would you Kubrick it and have one giant film with acts, or would you break it out into film nine?
What is
A,
this, Marvel?
B, C?
No.
I mean, you can do both.
Well, like I said, they'd just be like little like episodics, you know, where they're all but like themed around.
A day in the life of Snugglebed.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that way Snugglebed can do different things, you know.
What kind of hijinks will Snugglebed get into?
Yeah.
These are all great options, and none of them are going to make it into film three, except for maybe the adaptation side. I heard Rum Punch is a pretty good book. I might adapt that one. So.
I've read that book.
How was Rum Punch, Jacob?
I don't remember.
He just wanted to flex on us.
Dude.
That was the one where where Hunter S. is living in Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the only book I've read not for a book report.
Oh.
The
really?
Only book.
I thought Rum Punch was the one Jackie Brown's based on.
It is.
Oh.
Was it Hyacin or?
Yeah, I was making a joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's already been very well adapted.
Oh, I'm thinking, sorry, I'm mixing up Rum titles.
I read that maybe 13 or 14 years ago.
Well, there's never been a better time. So, Ryan, what else do you want to know about film three?
Questions.
Nothing really.
All right, very good.
All right, shift happens.
Film three is going to be extremely goofy, is all I know about it. Because every time I'm inspired by a scene that stays with me, it's because something fucking goofy is going on.
Real quick, Matt. So you confessed. I don't mean to break your confidence on a pod, but you know, if we can do it anywhere, we should do it here. You confessed that you were like affected by the remake of Roadhouse that we watched together.
Yes.
Okay. And so I was like, I was like on the way home in a long car ride, and I'm like, fucking seriously? And so like, but I think what I kind of took from that, and let me know if my interpretation is that, like,
oh, I will.
You wanted it to kind of be like fun, like you wanted like some sort of like some sort of like energizing effect from having like making it and then watching it, right? Because like that movie's primary focus is not story, it's not drama,
no,
it's not Aristotelian thematics, it's
banter between attractive people.
Yes, exactly.
With punching.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Like there's a degree to which criticism of films really loses the plot.
Right.
And to quote a tweet. does one need more than to want to see a beautiful face huge?
Yeah, exactly.
And Roadhouse is the new Roadhouse specifically, I can't vouch for the old one, but the new one is just a bunch of people saying NPC-ass dialogue at each other and then getting into like CGI fights.
Mm-hmm.
Conor McGregor puts in just a stellar performance.
It's an amazing performance.
As a psychotic goofball.
Yeah.
Like, he's walking like no humans ever walked before.
I want
before.
Him to play Popeye.
Yeah.
So bad.
Oh, my God.
It would be amazing.
Would be. Okay.
Because have you seen these, like, fake Popeye trailers on YouTube?
I have
One
not.
Of them has, like, Will Smith as Popeye.
Yeah, they're weird.
They're really weird. But once you see it, you're going to go, no, Conor McGregor has to be Popeye.
Yeah, I think it would be great.
No better. Yeah.
He's choice. Already ununderstandable.
Yeah, and the thing that it ran into that Roadhouse specifically appealed to me on is that I have hit, like, a sort of zen in my life, which I assume Matt was keying into in the way in which my resolution seemed like something I was already doing, and he was correct, which is that basically everyone is way, way too taking everything too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I have maybe a pathological degree of this kind of, it's not apathy, because I do like, it's enjoyment is not apathy. That's different, but it's like the melodrama, I'm not here for it.
Right.
Like, I love Barry Lyndon because Barry Lyndon never really actually suffers. He's suffering within the context of his tiny little world, mm-hmm. but he cries through the whole film.
Right.
And it's hilarious.
Yes.
Because you can't take it seriously.
No. Absolutely.
And that's the degree to which I feel like that's the way that emotions in films resonate to me across all films. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, like, I've broken through the veil of people crying in film.
Right.
And I'm not here for it anymore. I'm here for punching, and I'm here for dumb dialogue, and I'm here for weird looks and large eyes, and like, I just, yeah, it's Beach Bum, another fantastic
movie.
Yeah,
that is an amazing movie.
Yeah, I don't need more tension than that. Like, if you can do tension, that's fine, but it's really hard to pull that off, and don't force it on me, all right? Develop your craft in your bedroom and then put it on and then become the Coen brothers and display it there. But other than that, I'm not interested in this amateur horseshit,
right.
Which is a problem with developing taste.
Yes.
Inevitably when you're a creative, because it makes everything seem dissatisfying. I don't think that's what I'm running into.
Right.
I don't think this is a reach, exceed, and grasp problem. I'm okay with our films kind of sucking in the ways amateur films do. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, you gotta start somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even have to be that resigned about it. Like, you can enjoy things of low quality.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. But I want film 3 to be something that is not aspirational outside of that box. So we were talking about, like, our inability to act, mm-hmm. which I mean, it's fair to say none of us can actually act.
Yeah. Hey.
None of us can actually act.
You're right.
Matt looks great on camera.
Matt, you are the closest we have. you are the closest we have.
I was watching the documentary.
But all she did was hold a phone. All
right, pretend I didn't say any of the rest of this, or that Anna doesn't exist.
Done.
Yeah.
I mean, she talked the shit out of that phone that she was holding. That lump of clay that she was holding.
No, right? I simply forgot that Anna existed. She's literally an actor. But speaking in this room.
Teaching is.
Yeah.
She's a ringer. It's cheating.
Yeah. And I don't want to put her as a star of a movie. That's ridiculous. So.
She'll never be a star.
That's right.
She's, David, what are you going to say?
What am I going to say? I'm going to say that film 3 is going to meet expectations.
Okay.
That's where film 3 is going to be.
And you're meeting that expectation by not rushing it.
Correct.
Because
what will happen? I'm going to either shoot, I'm going to overshoot, or I'm going to undershoot by trying to stuff a thing into a box that it doesn't fit in. I'm going to make sure it's got the time it needs, because we've got films going on. I don't need a film right now. The cameras are all in use. The lights are all in use.
Yeah, Skinamahawk's production is going on indefinitely right now.
I kind of want to do...
And everything is in use.
Yeah.
The resources are expended.
Yeah, I kind of want to do something, but it's not going to be a full film. It's going to be a single 30-second shot.
Yeah.
That has to happen when the weather is cool.
Perfect. An advertisement.
Yeah, Jacob's filming a commercial.
Yeah,
right.
Nice.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
No, perfect. This is the best way to start.
Let's
you need
go,
to do something
bro.
That
Let's
I
just go,
yeah.
It's a complicated 30 seconds, but it's a 30-second one-shot, one piece.
Yeah.
That's
start
it.
But it will meet expectations.
Yeah. Hey,
oh, yeah.
Jacob. I got a storyboard template you can print out and just start storyboarding.
Jacob, we're here for you, man.
Yeah.
We got you.
Yeah.
We'll start a whole new thing that's not called films, so it doesn't need to be 48 minutes long.
This crew getting better every time.
Yeah.
Well, also, right, it'll put the if you do include it as one of the films, it'll put the kibosh on it needing to be longer.
Yeah, that's
time.
Why we can't do that. We have to call it something else.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out the window.
Yeah.
We could call it like a music video or something.
Whatever. Didn't matter.
Just my specialty at one point was 10-second long films.
That's like Vine.
Yeah,
Vine.
I'd like to go back to my roots, actually. 10 seconds.
Go for it.
That's it.
It's a good constraint.
Imagine the editing is much easier.
That's why.
Clips.
Yes, exactly right. I've got no time for the rest of this.
You got no time for it?
Yeah. Or
what
attention.
Do you,
what
do
I mean.
You have time
I like
for?
Long
Shift
form
happens.
Form cinema.
Yes.
Not short form.
Exactly.
He doesn't have the energy or commitment. Engagement? Engagement.
He may have one and not the other. We don't know yet.
I'll have to do a journal to find out.
Yeah, 3-week minimum trial period on that fucking analysis system.
All right, Matt, I spent $150 on a 2-volume hardcover set of Shift Happens by Marcin Wickery. I've read about 60 pages of it. You read the whole thing. You have the floor.
Not the whole thing, okay. But I'm almost through volume one of this book.
Very good.
And I'm having a great time with it. So you and I, David, discussed a while ago keyboards. So I got onto a 1 week long kick about why it is that we use the one keyboard that we use and how upset that I was with it. And I was like, we could do better than this. I'm holding up a QWERTY keyboard right now. And I've one of the things that I've learned from, and thank you for spending the $150 on this.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, great.
It was very, very well spent.
Well, I agree. Yeah, given the benefit that I'm getting from this book. Yeah, exactly. And also, one of the things that I've learned is it could have been worse. For example, here's a keyboard. So I'm showing the room right now this monster of a keyboard that is not in English. I think I see a swastika on this. Not quite. Anyway, this keyboard, instead of having its traditional four rows, Ryan, I thought that was a swastika for a moment. Woo. Yeah. In the bottom left of this keyboard. But no, the caption says, an earlier shiftless Thai keyboard.
Oh.
So apparently, and I think Thai literally has 80 characters. And that, yeah, that tracks with this keyboard that we're looking at right now. Anyway, so we almost... Like back in the 1920s, 10s, maybe late 1800s even, there was a thing called the Shift Wars. And this is one of the reasons why the book is called Shift Happens. It's because in part of the Shift Wars that happened around the turn of the 20th century. And the Shift Wars was, hey, are keyboards going to have a shift key or not? And in the shiftless keyboard, and I'm not going to find it because I've closed the book, but in that Thai keyboard that you just saw, that was a keyboard with no shift keys. And we could have ended up in a situation very easily where instead of having four rows on our keyboard of like objectively poorly placed keys, Q, W, E, R, Y, like W, H, Y, Y. And... yet, it's not as bad as it could have been. We could have had eight rows. So I'm complaining less.
I was going to say, we would have had to just get rid of lowercase letters if we didn't have the shift, I'm guessing.
That's what many keyboards did.
Yeah, digitally. Yeah.
Yep, and that's what TTYs did, too.
Same thing with my own writing after
you're just screaming at your readers.
I just got rid of the lowercase letters.
Right, yeah. Right. And for a while, like, people didn't think that you were screaming at them. There was not that connotation back in the, even as late as the 80s.
Yeah.
True. But yeah, so I'm more okay with how keyboards ended up now that I've been reading through Shift Happens.
I don't know. I think keyboards are fine. You push a button, shows up on screen, mission accomplished.
Does what it needs.
Sure.
Bada-bing.
Pretty efficiently, too.
Yeah, no, you're right. More efficiently than Morse code,
I mean,
for
look
example.
What we have done with them.
Yeah.
See, and not to allude to another conversation, but the thing that's important with the keyboard is, for the most part, there is one standard for the English language. Obviously, when you have different languages with like S sets and accents, there may be, but like plain old English, there's basically one set. There's not the British keyboard and the German accent keyboard. And the Australian keyboard, there's just the QWERTY, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's arbitrary, but at least we picked
one. Consistently arbitrary.
Consistent arbitrary standard.
In English.
In English.
You mean
obviously,
English,
if we have other characters, there has to be exceptions.
Well, even in France, they use a layout called Azerty, where even a couple of the letters on the keyboard that uses like only Latin characters and a couple accents, sure, have a few keys switched. Like the Q is not in the position that it is on the QWERTY keyboard in France.
Do they have the accents easily acceptable, like easily
inputable. There are languages that treat accented letters as their own.
You don't have
keys.
To hit control and hit 2, 4, correct. 5 in some locales,
there are, for example, an enye, like the N with the tilde over it, in some languages and in some keyboards has its own key, for example.
Okay. Matt, I'm going to break your heart here real quick. I'm looking at the Azerty keyboard. There are no accent marks on any of those keys, but I want you to look at this keyboard and tell me if anything pops out at you about it.
Yeah, the A, Z, E, R, T, Y.
I want you to look at the orientation of the keys.
The Is it that they're not staggered?
They are in a grid.
Yeah, yeah. Look at that. The first two rows are in a grid. This is not the case for the... You're showing me the iPhone keyboard. This is not the case for the iPhone QWERTY keyboard? There's yeah, it's QWERTY actually keyboard. Staggered. Wow, that's kind of amazing. Wow. Yeah.
Vive la France. Still no accent marks, though, which is weird. I don't know how they're supposed to do them quickly. Maybe they just don't type very fast.
I think they either use dead keys or the autocomplete would figure that out for them on an iPhone. I don't know whether that's the same on their physical keyboards, but I'm no French expert.
I wish I was a French expert.
Same, yeah.
I don't, actually. That'd be way too much work. So that book's pretty good. I did enjoy what I read of it. I just got tired of reading it after a while because it was long. It's a big book. It's two books, actually.
Three.
Oh, there's a little... What's in that insert?
You got the extras. So one extras? Of the things... I was smiling when I was reading. There's a section called... It's something like, What I Want My Book to Be. Let me try and find it. Key Stories Scroll Lock. That'll be a good one. do you all know what the scroll lock key does? Because I don't. I actually know one thing that the scroll lock key does in Microsoft Excel, but I'm trying to put that behind me. What I Want My Book to Be. So page 32 of volume 3 of Shift Happens. Put together before writing a single word. Revised a few times since. Last updated in June 2018 and untouched here, so you can see how I fared. I'm just going to read one of these bullets.
Go on.
I want my book to be uniquely mine. I'm excited about writing my book because I don't think anyone else can write it. I'll be happy to share my big research database with other people, and already have, because those are just ingredients. My voice, my approach, my enthusiasm for the project should all be there and make it unique. And like reading other bullets like that, I was like, this guy kicks ass.
But, he's very passionate about his topic.
And it comes through in the writing of the book itself, too. I wouldn't say it's the passion that comes through so much as just the... I guess that is a good word for it. But it's also just the matter of fact with which he's hitting you with facts about keyboards mm-hmm. and the things that keyboards spawned over time. And like seeing his enthusiasm for the subject come through in like little subtle jokes that pop up in the book and like how he treats the stuff with respect. And one of the other bullets here is like a lot of the stuff in the history of keyboards and typewriters is like, these guys are doing stuff all stupid like this. And he's like, I don't want my book to have any of that.
Okay.
I don't want my book to just be poo-pooing on the decisions that people have made so much. There is a little bit of that, but he's like, I'm not going to make this nearly even a central theme of the book. Instead, I'm going to treat the stuff with respect. And like just seeing the way that he approached this project and going through all the different stuff is like, I'm on board with the mission.
How long did he take to write these books, do you guys know?
He started in something like 2016. I think he left his job at Medium at that time. Okay. And part of the genesis story of the book was the office where he worked had tons of old keyboards in it. He was like, what's that? And then he just kept asking that question. But anyway, so he dropped that job in 2016 and published this in 2023.
Okay.
And just like all
time writing,
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And like so. All great artists, English is not his first language.
Oh, of course. The only people that know how to write good come into this thing second.
Yeah, he's Polish
guy. Yeah. Yeah.
And it shows in some of the phrases. Jacob, what the hell? What's you sitting over there? What are you doing?
I'm sitting here.
All right. Very good. I think that covered all of our topics. Let's see if we got anything else. Resolution 35, Q2 debrief. I think we've basically covered that. Q2 debrief, Q3 scope.
That was abrupt.
Q3 scope?
That's called a vibra slap.
what a language. Q3 scope. What are we going? Are we going long with this Q? What do you got?
What? We can't go long. It's a defined period of time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with quarters. But that's also the merit of quarters. is that they are finite. So within Q3, the following things will happen. Think about it. Let's see what's going to happen in Q3. I haven't thought about it. We've got until
the end of what, September?
Yeah, I didn't think about this.
There's no time to rush. Yeah,
Labor Day.
Labor Day is the white pants day.
Yes.
Yeah.
I need some white pants. I don't have any white pants.
Dye your pants white. You have bleach.
Yeah. You gotta launder out all those urine stains.
Yeah. Ryan,
all over my pants.
Ryan, if you got an Apple Watch,
I got an Apple. Oh yes, Apple Watch. Yes. Should I?
In Q3.
And then we can leave this up to the table. Should I buy an Apple Watch?
No.
What are you, a dweeb?
That's
so.
He's moved on. I would take it under advisement. Yeah, sure. Why not? Sure.
Oof.
All right.
Back to Dave.
Oh, I didn't try to. Okay, I didn't. Oh, I swear I didn't try to do that on purpose.
All right.
Just be this indecisive fifth
vote. Tiebreaker. You cannot abstain.
Oh, this sucks. Okay, so let's review the Apple Watch really quickly in a way that is not boring for people who already listened to this podcast and listened to the last time I took... Shut up.
Check it out. You want to pay for something? Paid for.
So if you want to pay for things, I know you love paying for things.
You know how hard it is to take a credit card out and do this motion with your arm?
It's so hard,
it's exhausting.
I just have to do that.
It's dog shit. All right. Okay.
Ease of transaction.
So, Ryan, are you a steps guy or are you a reps guy?
All right, so... I have not completed a circle on my steps in probably since I moved was the last time I completed a circle.
Do you aspire to be a steps guy or a reps guy?
I feel like completing a full 360 rotation more in my life could benefit me.
The Apple Watch will help you do that.
It'll remind you.
It'll remind you constantly. Okay. About it
has three circles in order of condescension.
Right.
One for standing enough.
Okay.
I never get credit for standing that fucking watch.
Yeah, that's because you're not standing right.
It's because I'm not sitting. It's because I'm not sitting enough.
For it to realize that you've stood up.
Yeah, it sucks.
That's your problem. And then the next one's green, and that one, it's just timing when you exercise, and that's mostly useless.
Well, I ain't getting filled.
And then you got the move.
Okay. Oh, I kill that move.
Because Apple doesn't care about steps.
Oh, very good.
And this is why it matters whether you're steps or reps.
Okay.
Because Apple's about reps.
We already shot a video of a comparison of the two competing watches between Matt and David.
Are you moving?
When Matt bought the quarterback playbook wristband.
Dude, I had the weather forecast on my quarterback wristband.
On tap, ready to rock. So, he had a checklist ready for what he needed accomplished for the day.
No,
it
I
didn't try to
list.
Tell him what was going on next week. It wasn't worried about telling him what the news was.
List.
It just
so
told
I have
him,
my grocery
what
list.
Am I doing today?
You want to know the weather?
That's all I needed
I got
to
my
know.
Sam's list.
I may bring it back.
Look at all that useless information.
All of it. And there's an endless amount of it, too.
You want a timer? I'm gonna hit this button.
You can listen to your podcast directly from here.
One,
as long as you don't fuck
two,
it up and connect to your
three.
Phone. And then it
yeah,
doesn't
I wouldn't
work
describe
for the rest
that
of the
as
day.
A feature.
Yeah.
It's fantastic when it works.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Or you can open up a flap and see a physical note card that says, take nap.
I
check that bad boy off with a pencil.
I will be honest, I have always wanted to play collegiate football.
There you
so,
go.
I mean, there is that.
And there's no subscription. And you always have full service.
Well, but that's dependent on you. I mean, there's, part of the feature of that is that, like, engineers at Apple and very tiny Asian hands have already done a lot of the work for you. So.
Yeah, but unless you want it to dictate your day, you still have to put that into the Apple Watch. So it's the same amount of effort from the quarterback sleeve to the Apple Watch.
All right, what's the circle completion component of the quarterback band?
The quarterback band doesn't use circles, it uses bars, and you have to fill in the bar yourself.
Gotcha.
So it's a beginning to an end. You don't come full circle.
Never.
And
you
get to go to Target and buy the colored pencils and select your own colors.
You're not forced to have the three oppressive colors that Apple has chosen for you.
Okay.
Which are condescending.
No,
I'm not trying to say, again, as
I'm selling myself on buying one of those Cardman bracelets, honestly, right now.
As the fence sitter, I'm trying
to... calling me a dweeb.
Dude, the more I'm thinking about this, like, oh my god, to not have a screen try to tell me the news throughout the day would be amazing.
Okay, what do you got, David? What do you got?
What I was just saying is, as the fence sitter, I'm trying to ask you the hard dilemma.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And the first one we still haven't settled is if you're a steps or a reps guy.
Well, no, I see. This is the thing.
Yeah, number one is
I'm,
the first one.
Ooh, that looks good. I will be honest. I mean, look, I have no...
Ryan, what play are you on?
I don't know, man. I don't have a band. I be,
we pulled up a picture of the wristband on the screen here.
In the world. And it's 27% off.
Like okay. $7.27.
Look, I aspire to complete things. Don't get me wrong. Reps. I could be a rep guy. You know, I could rep it. I think.
Do you have the other equipment necessary to be a reps guy?
Okay, so that see, I'm ignorant of these. Lay it on me. What do we got?
Do you own any bells?
Bells,
dumb or otherwise.
Of the kettle variety.
I think I left them all in the yard when I moved.
Okay, so you may still have those.
Yeah, I could just walk all over there. Yeah, I'll check that out later. All
right, so that's okay. An additional expense you have to consider.
Okay.
Above and beyond this watch.
All right.
If you're going to be a reps guy. If you're just going to be a steps guy.
Yeah.
If you're going to, like, keep this wiry frame action. Right. It's really a matter of assertiveness. Bro. Like, there's...
We're talking about adding mass?
I don't want to talk... alpha and beta necessarily, but like yeah. we are talking disposition. Like, are you like this, or are you like this?
I want to lean back more. You know,
okay.
That's
a reps attitude.
Really?
Yeah. And that costs.
Oh,
you got.
I
you
pay?
Need equipment for that.
Okay.
Like an Apple Watch.
What? Yeah. No, like a kettlebell. First, but then you can use the Apple Watch to facilitate that, or you can get. An exercise video from Matt, who
okay.
will show you how to do it.
Well, but Matt's a reps guy without sounds Apple Watch, though.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying there may be an alternative where Matt can fax you a DVD where he explains how to do the reps without the watch.
Gotcha. Well, no, but I
think you say fax him a DVD.
Do you have lots of notifications on your phone?
I do.
And does it kind of, is it a hassle to have to look at your phone all
it
the time?
It is.
Then get the watch.
Okay.
Because that's what it is. It's a luxury
or just leave
device.
Your phone at home.
Get a piece of paper.
And get no notifications.
Exactly.
Would not be able to work.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a luxury that I do not have. But yeah.
Getting an Apple Watch just means that you now make enough money
you should talk to your
union
rep about it.
Luxury on your wrist.
Oh,
really.
Gotcha. So I've arrived.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if you can afford it. And it would benefit you, go for
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha, okay.
It's easy. It's easy for me to log into my things with MFA. I just hit the button and, you know.
So here is where all of my tension in this comes from.
Right.
And I'm glad you asked about this, Ryan, because
yes.
I am considering getting rid of mine.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, so you're going back to steps guy.
I'm No.
No, okay, I'm
no,
sorry.
Reps guy doesn't need the watch, because reps guy is fucking making it happen. Steps, you're counting that shit. You're like doing it's like the
yeah.
circle complete. Reps is like looking in the mirror.
Okay.
That's the watch.
That's where the circle is.
The watch face is the bathroom mirror.
All right, David. So are you saying you've become a reps guy in spite of the fact that you've got
that's,
the Apple Watch?
That is correct.
Okay.
Every once in a while I bring myself back on track being a steps guy with the watch. Mm-hmm. I sign up for the Fitness Plus. It's like $10 a month. A lot of extremely in shape smiley people play nauseating upbeat music and it's effective and it's regimented, it's great, it's fucking I hate it.
Right.
I don't like doing it at all.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm wasting my life.
Okay.
And that's the steps mentality. And I can't criticize that for its results. I can criticize it for feeling like I want to kill myself while
okay.
doing it.
Okay.
Which is where, again, the watch is objectively making me healthier
mm-hmm.
and more suicidal at the same time.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out the balance there.
Okay.
I'm ordering one of these quarterback wristbands.
Oh man, we've got the table's dividing right now. This is not what I wanted from this conversation. Who's that fucking hunk of fucking steak right there?
Hang on,
this...
bro, you're literally covering a punchline. There it is. You see a watch on that wrist?
No one knows. But I mean, to be honest, I don't I don't see a quarterback, the kettlebell man
with no watch on. He's pointing at us.
He can't
kettlebell.
Fit the fucking thing on his arm. Look at that thing. It would slide right off.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is actually a problem. If you have a wrist with any definition at all, it just like rides up like this and it sucks.
No, you're doing the thing. Yeah.
This right. Like the heartbeat sensor is one of the coolest features about this. It works about 30% of the time because it like sloshes. Yeah,
but your heart beats 100% of the time.
I know. I mean, that's how often I need it to work.
I wear it all day and my heart.
It also has like the O2 sensor, so you know if you have COVID and your fucking O2 is dropping.
And it has the EKG monitor.
Yeah.
Damn. Not only will you know if you have COVID, but also big data is going to know.
Exactly.
And you don't want them to know.
They're going to know already.
They know already.
They'll know a little bit further into the future.
This side of the table is data fatalistic. that argument is not going to work over here.
Yeah. Right.
They're very much fans of knowing all this stuff.
Whereas the more technology finds its way into my professional job, the more I want to remove technology from my personal life.
All right, so I got this. Excuse me, Jacob. It's about me here. Okay. what style or edition of Apple Watch are we talking about here? Right, like because I know there are levels. Like with Apple products, I know there's always levels.
There's
I mean, how much platinum?
There's only
is
a few levels.
All right, what
like,
do you got?
Like,
you got the top. You got the top
no,
level.
I don't have the top
level.
This is
no.
the larger.
They haven't
There's
gone clear yet.
Gone.
No, I haven't gone titanium because it's like $800 and it's really just I just didn't need it. There's some other features like GPS stuff on it. This one has GPS stuff on it too. But
all right, well this isn't convincing me.
This is the Apple Watch 8.
8? Okay.
Yep. Not
that's that is the Casio F
91W.
The W.
Wow.
The W stands for watch.
It's the WR version.
W stands for watch.
What does the F stand for?
Fuck.
Okay. Fucking 91 watch, baby.
Yeah, look at that thing.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a luxury. That's all it is. But
not a necessity.
Luxury.
No, I would. I mean, like, if you have a lot of notifications, that's probably, I don't know, would justify it more than almost anything.
Okay, so you guys got the mid-range, not the base. You got the base, right? Or the mid-range?
Yeah.
The base?
Yeah, it's a silver. It's got the thing on it. There's a version
of
it that's got the bigger digital crown.
Yeah, that's the titanium one.
If you want to pretend like you hike, you can get the bigger one.
That's what I'm saying. You don't need that one.
Yeah.
That one is for, like,
I am against big watch culture. I am of the opinion that watches are too dang big.
Yes.
The weed is too fucking strong.
So there's two sizes of this style. There's a slightly smaller version and then this size.
Okay.
The Ryan, two versions of the quarterback wristband are youth and adult.
Just so you can compare.
Yeah, no adolescent. Okay. Because I really felt I could fall into that category.
And then they have different color, you know, bezels or whatever. And then you can buy a different. You go on.
Let me get those straps. Let me see them strap games.
Amazon, you can get like these straps for $6.
$6 straps?
Yeah. I buy, like, every year I buy, like, a pack of 10. So
yeah. I mean, that's cheaper than the straps for the quarterback band.
Yeah.
So.
Ryan, we're still missing a lot of motivational data here.
Okay, gotcha.
Are you trying to live longer or look good? What are you after here? Are you trying to, like, wake up in the morning and go, yeah! Is that something you want?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so that's against the rep side.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
One check against the reps. All
right, one check again.
But then we have to bring in again.
No.
Do you want to luxuriate?
It's possible.
Okay.
No, I want to experience, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to conquer life, you know. That's not me. I'm not a conquer life kind
okay.
of guy.
Okay, that's definitely Steps mentality.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah.
So that is leaning in the direction of the technocracy here.
Okay.
What does Peter Attia have to say about this?
I asked Google if Peter Attia is a steps or a reps guy. And the first result is peterattiamd.com/exercise and physical health.
Attia might be the most steps guy on earth.
Okay. And he's no
He
he's
got
no
huge
Apple
recently, though.
Oh, did that,
was
is that new?
Let's see that.
He got huge recently.
Let's get a recent photos. Check that wrist.
Oh, shit, that jawline has improved. I can see that just there.
I don't know if we're going to be able to find a picture of him on, probably right, on any of these podcast photos, but, oh, Jesus, okay, I've clicked on one of the links and instead I've got.
Peter Attia is a preeminent longevity person.
All right, we're not going to see any pictures of him here. We'll probably have to go back to Google for that.
He's Persian.
I see. Probably not. To
even for fun.
Oh, actually, he has a really conflicted feeling about that because he really, 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 really likes nicotine.
Yes. No, so. There's nothing That's wrong fine. With it.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Canadian. All right.
There we go.
Moving on.
Yeah, right.
Moving. Look at.
So that's a, that. So,
bro, there's nothing on those wrists. Look at that. Crazy. And he's holding kettlebells. Get the fuck out of here.
That's definitely David, definitely
you,
not oh, him.
No, you. What?
That's definitely not him.
I mean,
no.
Longevity expert.
Anyway.
Okay.
That's the word I used. I was right. According to the Hone Health?
Hone Health.
That's a terrible
I mean, no, but what's selling this guy to me is that not only is he conspicuously sans Apple Watch, he's sans regular watches, which those things are, I mean.
He's not a slave to time.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he's longevity.
That's because he's rich.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, my life feels so long. I don't know what time it is.
Yeah, he may also be one of the most slavish, too. Is that a wasp?
That's a big-ass bug.
A wasp in here.
That's aggressively flying.
Probably. Yeah, it looks like something like that.
Yeah, fucking hornet? What's going on?
I don't think it's a hornet.
All right.
I'll go deal with this. Ryan, you're now 1-1 steps right. to reps. You need to make a call here.
All right, Ryan, now you've presented yourself with a potential conflict of technology.
Indeed.
You don't wear a watch in your regular life. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I was always a little, you know, I never liked knowing what time was. And then, you know, you get a phone and suddenly that solves that problem, right?
He's moving again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
gestalt.
But you know, Ryan, you know, you've never been great at like using technology anyway, right? Like you barely get by on what you've got to do, and you only have, mastered the iPhone simply by exposure to it. So, I mean, if you can't imagine the possibilities of what a phone can do for you, and the options and improvements that are there, if you're not actively wanting to imagine how that can be better, then why buy a device that you know, you're really not seeing the horizons of possibility on. Well, I want to think that, you know, we can change and improve ourselves and, I'm wanting to try new things I'm a spoiled boy, you know, like I've learned, you know, that I am a soft boy for one thing. So this idea of steps and reps, I mean, to be honest, I'd choose neither, which to be frank with you, are you saying neither? Yeah. I mean, I'm just not like the other guys, right? Like, there's just, you know, this constant worry of needing motivation and things like that. Like, there's only what's got to be done. There's nothing really beyond that. And then having fun and achieving that is really where I'm at. I mean, but Ryan, we know you're a little bit more ambitious than that. I mean, it's got to be something, you know, more to it. And an Apple Watch might help you, you know, become something and engage with the possibilities that you can actually have earned and want this.
Well, shit, I guess I'll try it out then.
Sounds good.
David's Ryan.
Sold.
That's a wrap.
All right. Sold, new product, Apple Watch incoming, tan lines approaching.
Order it from apple.com, it'll be there tomorrow.
Oh, baby. I've got Apple Pay on my phone.
Yeah.
Now it'll be on your watch.
My deciding factor on that, if I hadn't interjected as you there, was to ask if you use AirPods.
No, I use the Aftershocks.
Okay, then don't get an Apple Watch.
Yeah, dude, you have nowhere. Buy yourself some fucking, buy the right Beats.
The Apple Beats
to connect with your shit.
It won't pair with the Aftershocks?
It will.
The Beats are like meant for it.
There's
like
more technology
it's
involved
talking.
In integration.
They're talking. They're talking whether you want them to or not.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I believe that's all the topics. So unless there's additional evangelizing of products that we need to do here, we've already made one sale, so that's good. Oh, that is the cowbell. Okay.
It was a little bit more resonant than I'm used to.
It's resonating off something.
You're supposed to stick
It's off the snare drum.
You're supposed to stick paper or a rag in it, and that'll give it the deadened.
Oh.
Yeah, you hold the bottom.
Yeah,
that
classic
as well.
Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, that was fun.
Is everyone ready for quarter three?
Yeah, let's bring it on, baby.
Bring it on.
I feel like we scoped it appropriately. Ryan's gonna get a watch. He'll return it in a month. And
quarter four will start.
And then that'll be quarter four. That's when the weather gets good around here. What can I say? Yeah. So I don't have a sign off for season 12, so we're just going to kind of fade into weatherspark.com.
It's Orlando right there.
Climate maps.
Beautiful weather graphs brought to you by weatherspark.com.
100%.
Here we are. Hourly average weather in Orlando, Florida. Here we are.
It's hot for the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
about
right. No, that's... there's a place on Earth like that.
Yeah, Florida.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Here.
Hell.
Florida.
Singapore. Welcome to being hot all year.
Oh, so consistent.
Yeah, but it's like in the higher 80s though.
Yeah.
You're like,
it's not like here where it's 95, 98 all flipping day.
Okay, yeah, you're right. And we haven't seen, so this is the average that we're looking at right now. They go into sweltering, and if you look, see right here, sweltering. Oh. And if you look at the historical, you definitely get some sweltering lately.
Hold on, that's months across the bottom. Yeah. I was misreading this.
Uh-huh, yeah, yeah. So down here, this is a good time.
This was an example of what the days were in this particular month, not the averages for all the months.
Oh, we can find that.
We've just passed over no comfortability.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It will not be comfortable for several months.
That was this week. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Not even at 5:30 a.m. do you get that one little moment of relief.
Yep. Yeah. Even waking up and walking to the gym before the sun is up still sucks.
There's no escape.
I have to run to McDonald's in the summer.
But then
that's
we'll
not
get the
a
payoff.
Joke, by the way.
We'll get the payoff once again.
Very good. Look at that cold. They got a little pond of cold.
It only hits select areas.
45 to 55 is a...
That river of comfortable looks enticing.
Let's go. I think they could move all of them down one. 45 to 50 is cool.
I'm downright
comfortable needs to be 55 to 65. 75 in the sun, I'm sweating my ass off.
That's beautiful. 75 is perfect.
It's still hot when you start doing things, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why all of mine is based on if I had to pick something up and move it.
All right. Maybe if I had to do
something.
I don't know this. I don't know that I could actually recommend it. But, and if I were to
zero out of one
stars
again,
yeah.
then perhaps I try and, like... track things other than energy and engagement. But
oh god,
it's been fine. And I'm glad I've done the exercise.
Oh fuck.
My life is not designed yet, but it's
but we're on the right track?
Yeah, yeah. Right. We're on a track.
Kind of
yeah.
I don't know. You can't trust that. You don't know what those people spend
exactly.
lots of time doing.
Yeah.
Lots of time doing something
right.
to take your money.
Yeah.
Wait, so what's
it seems
so what
very
was the point
subject.
Of the exercise to like separate energy from focus?
No, okay, so it's generally to figure out, like, what exactly is it that I like about the things that I like? Let that sink in for a second.
Right. Done.
And Ryan's like, there's nothing to sink there. There's no content what matches it.
I know what I like. I like what I like.
Identifying it,
but,
into a bunch of attributes that you can then, you know, analyze and discuss.
That's exactly it.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Object-oriented programming, but for life.
Bingo. Yes. They didn't put in exactly such terms, but that's basically it. It's like, okay, let me break down the ingredients of what I like about what I am doing, let's put it that way,
okay.
And what it is that I don't like about what I'm doing, too.
Okay.
And let's think about this using the framework of energy and engagement. And I agree that probably those aren't, like, the best metrics to pick,
but
and that's why I looked at
that
book like this,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, see, that's the disconnect I have with it, where it's, like, energy and engagement are a weird thing for what you were trying to describe.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't seem to really correlate with what it seems like it's trying to do.
Okay, let me get a reason you haven't heard of this book.
Exactly. Like, look, you can apply this to anything.
I gotta be honest.
That's a different story.
I can't name the last book that I've heard of.
Oh, very good. Okay.
The last book I've heard of is hundreds of instances of someone going, well, I read the book, trying to flex.
Oh, okay.
So, Matt, how far into the book are you? Into the design of your life?
25%.
25%, okay.
Just about.
Okay.
Now, I gotta point out something that's like floating through the front of my frontal lobe right now. It's that I feel like I'm trying to score points right now by sort of poo-pooing on this. And I did at the same time say, like, all right, I'm trying to approach this exercise in this book with a good attitude.
Sure.
Because I gotta step back for a second. So how did I find out about this book? That's the question that's now on your mind because I just said so. So
Matt, here's the problem. Matt, I do have to, as a general commentary on stories.
Yes.
You make too many assumptions about what the audience cares about in terms of context.
Say more.
We wanted to know more about your motivation. We didn't care how you got to the book. It didn't come up.
Yeah.
You can gloss over it. It's fine.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. So let's not even discuss that.
Correct.
Let's go back
to... Let's close
to,
that door.
So, Ryan, you asked me how far into the book I've gotten. I've paused.
Okay. You said you had to consider.
And the reason that I've paused at about 25% of the way through the book is because in the next exercise, they want you to have done the Good Time Journal for 3 weeks. I'm doing a condensed version of this because I'm not doing it for 3 weeks.
So there's like
doing
milestones in this book that you have to hit before you can move forward?
They don't say so explicitly, but then I go to chapter 4 and it's like, okay, it's time for the mind mapping exercise. All right, so take your Good Time Journal that you've done. And then I flip back and it says, do this for 3 weeks. So I'm like, okay, I guess I need to put the book down for 3 weeks now while I do this exercise before I proceed on to the next one. Mm-hmm. And maybe that wasn't the intent, but if it wasn't the intent, then I'm like,
hey, it's your life.
You need to
craft.
You guys,
yeah.
Excuse me?
It's your life to craft. You can do it however you want.
I suppose so, but
design.
I want to fall. I want to
try. Sorry.
I would also like to approach the exercise with. By doing it in the way that they intended, right? So I don't want the authors of this book, when I have the conversation with them at the end of this, to say, which is not going to happen.
Right, well, this is a new development. So you were meeting the authors at some point of this.
Anything's possible, right? So in chapter...
But that was fairly declarative that, like, this meeting... I assumed it was scheduled or something, like...
For certain definitions of scheduled. And in the introduction to this book...
All
right. They say, this book, by the way, is based on, and this tangent is going to be very short, so don't worry. All right? It's based on one of the most popular courses at the university that they teach at.
Okay.
So they're like, hey, let's make this into a book form. And they say in this chapter that all of our students get the agreement from us that they have lifetime office hours. So I'm not a student of their class. I never was.
Yeah.
But I doubt that more than 0.1% of their former students take them up on that.
Okay.
So I could send them an email saying, hey, not a student, but ... read your book.
Right.
Could we do some office hours? And there's like a non-zero chance that they'd say yes
to that. It's worth a try.
Yeah. So there could be a conversation.
And that'll end up in their next book.
Yep.
It could, yeah. This one crazy guy reached out.
Crafting your life.
Yeah.
The next step.
Let's
first
design
you design,
it. Yes, and
then you
craft. Then you craft your life.
We can beat them to the punch. We can write this book before they do.
Ooh. Yeah,
you can steal all their secrets. It. They wrote them down. You just put them in your book instead.
Yeah, that's how self-help works.
Exactly.
Huh, okay.
You just
yeah.
make it up.
Yeah.
So I have
write about it through a different lens.
Like that love language shit? This shit's all made up.
You don't have to write through a different lens. You can literally say where you stole it from. They don't care. It is weird how often these books cite to each other. Because I read Slow Productivity recently, and Cal just cites all his stories. He's like, this pretty much came from here, and I read about this. He actually shits directly on the GTD system, which is excellent. Like, there's a separate productivity
book. His shitting is excellent, or the GTD system
No. The shitting's mediocre, but it is very funny to have a guy who's writing a book about productivity directly name a guy who wrote another popular book and say, this system does not work.
Okay, just look what GTD stands for.
Getting things done.
The classic David Allen book.
These are all their options.
But you haven't, we haven't gotten to mind mapping yet, Ryan. Why do we need a new topic if we haven't gotten to mind mapping yet? I think we need a new topic, actually.
Resolution 35.